main section of chapter 6, which is the discussing the sadhana for the Ashtanga yogi. And Krishna in 25 said that the person should not expect success in one day, but rather he should act slowly and steadily, approaching the goal. Being fixed in his determination by his intelligence. So one might ask that what happens when one begins, answers that by the next verse. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalam astiram tatas tato niyam yaitat atmanyeva vasham naye. From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So when one begins to control the mind, then what happens? Nischalati. Right? He begins to waver, becomes agitated. So by steady intelligence, the yogi must overcome these mental tendencies. Why does the mind waver in such a way? Because of past samskaras which run in the mind. And these are activated by Rajagun. But one should try to control them again and again. So devotees also shouldn't be careless in giving in to the mind. They shouldn't surrender to their mind, thinking that that will satisfy the mind and just let it run everywhere. One shouldn't do that because the mind will not become peaceful by indulgence, by like unlimited freedom. And there's no one else who can control your mind other than yourself. You can get people to do different things for you in this world, but this is one thing that you have to do yourself. So if you begin controlling the mind, then you will attain self-realization. This is described in the next verse. Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukam uttamam upayati shanta rajasam brahma bhutam makalmasham. The yogi whose mind is fixed on me verily attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity with the Supreme. And he is freed from all reactions to past deeds. So this is how he becomes free from passion. When the mind becomes fixed on the Lord. So in the next few verses, Krishna is explaining that the perfection is to realize the Super Soul. So text 27, according to Baladeva Vidyabhushan, is describing self-realization. But the next few verses describe Paramatma realization, the Super Soul. From 28 until 32. And that's the end of this section. Yunjan evam sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmasaha sukena brahma samsparsham adyantam sukham ashnute. Thus the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination and achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness in transcendental loving service to the Lord. So brahma samsparsham means in touch with the Supreme. So before we were here saying, Yehi Sam Sparsha Jaboka, right? How that's the source of misery. But this kind of touching the Supreme, gives a different result. Achantam Sukham Ashnate. Real happiness. Whereas touching the sense objects, Sam Sparsha Jaboka, then he gets dukkha. Right? But here we get real happiness. So it means sukham ashrate means they become liberated in this very life. So at that time the yogi becomes perfect. So now Krishna describes the characteristics of one who has attained Brahma and become liberated in this life. The characteristics. So his vision is being described of this Jivan Mukta. So this means that, okay, let us chant them. Characteristics.
Sarva bhutastam atmanam sarva bhutani chatmani ikshate yoga yutatma sarvatra samadarshanam.
A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. So ikshate means that he sees. It's not philosophically seeing, but directly seeing. Right. It doesn't mean that he just understands this. So he sees that all beings, sarvabhutani chakmani, inside of the Lord, atmini is in this saptami, and sarvabhutastam atmanam. He sees the Supreme Lord in all beings as the super soul. And sarvatra samadarsha, he sees him everywhere. So he directly experiences the Paramatma within all jivas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that one who is in samadhi, he behaves in two ways. One is bhava and one is kriya. Bhava means his vision, which is described in the next two verses. And kriya, his activities, are described in verse 32, after those two verses. So his bhava, or vision, is in 30 and 31, and his kriya, or activities, is found in verse 32. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's realization. Well, let's see. We could have some discussion about the Paramatma. You can imagine that the Ashtanga Yogi is very humble because he's seeing the Lord everywhere in everyone's heart. So naturally, he would feel very reverential or respectful to all beings because he sees the Lord is present in the person's heart. So this is important. And Lord Krishna describes to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that one should actually practice seeing the Lord within the hearts of all beings. And he even recommends that one offer his obeisances to a dog or a cow or an ass, something like this. He says that this is the highest kind of sadhana in that place. And then one should do this regularly. So when I read that, then I thought I would try it one day. And when I was in England, this was about maybe 95 or 96, something like this, one nice summer day, I went with some friends to the country, and we were walking around outside. There were some fields, and there were some wheat fields, I think, I remember correctly. And I was chanting my japa around this wheat field. And then I saw a dog, and he started to follow me. As I was walking through the wheat field, then he... I was wondering if he was still following me. So I'd stop and turn around. And then he was... And then I saw him, and he also stopped and looked at me and waited. And then I thought, okay, he's still there. And I kept walking. And then he started following me. And wherever I walked, he followed me. So then I stopped again. And then he stopped. And then I got out from the wheat field and turned to the right. And then he came out from the field. And I thought, okay, nobody's around. But I'll offer my obeisances to the dog. So I offered my obeisances. I got down on the ground and bowed down. And when the dog saw that, he kind of went like this. You know, he was shocked. He never saw a human offering his obeisances to him before. So he just ran away. Ran back into the field. Into the wheat field. But I could feel some... A few layers of false ego, you know, break away from me, from myself after doing that, because it was the first time I tried that. So actually the Lord is in everyone's heart, and if we are respectful to animals and birds and other creatures, then will be that much more respectful to human beings. And if we're respectful to all human beings, then we'll be that much more respectful to Vaishnavas. So it kind of... Because our mind is conditioned in any case, so we might as well condition it in a certain way. And it seems that that was Lord Krishna's intent in recommending such a practice. So now I can't say that I, you know, saw the super soul in the heart of the dog, but it did help anyway, and I did at least think that the Lord is inside, you know, at least philosophically I was thinking in such a way. But I was wondering if maybe some of you had some kind of similar realization where you either realized or at least thought that the Lord is in the heart of this person in some kind of exchange, either with non-devotees or with devotees. Did you ever think about that, or maybe realize that, or like perceive that the Lord was in the heart of a person? If you can just turn to your partner and just discuss this briefly, you can just pair up and with one other person. And if you never had such an experience, then you can just listen to what he says. But if you can think of some time, because you may not be able to remember, but if you concentrate for a moment, you may remember some incident where you actually experienced this. So just think about it and pair up and just with two devotees and express that to your friend there. So it seems that Supersoul realization is also a part of our process, since all of you were talking, at least most of you, had something to say about the Supersoul. So, of course we know that the Supersoul is just a partial manifestation of Krishna, but nonetheless he's a manifestation of Krishna. And according to the statement of Kaviraj Goswami, that stavara jangama deke na deke taramu sarvatraha nija ishta dev spurti. So ishta dev spurti means that the Vaishnava, when he comes to the level of perfection where he can see the Paramatma in the heart, then he sees the forms, but Nadeki Tara Murti doesn't only see the Murti, but he also sees his Ishtadev. So according to the mentality or the bhavana of the devotee, he sees the Paramatma in different ways. Actually, Lord Vishnu is there in the heart, Shirodakshai Vishnu, but usually we don't paint in our pictures Lakshmi Devi, who is also there. Because Lord Vishnu is never alone, he's always with his consort. So Lakshmi Devi is all-pervading, just as Lord Vishnu is, and they're always together as the divine couple. So they're present there, and the devotee, depending on his bhavana, he sees either Sita Ram, or Rukmini Dwarkadish, or Radha and Krishna. And we can see Radha and Krishna also in Aishwarya or in Madhurya. So, just like if Hanuman sees the Supersoul, then he naturally sees Sita Ram. And even within his own heart, when he exhibits in those paintings, you see, you know, Sita Ram. So the devotee actually will see his Ishtadev. That's the point. But here is a yogi we're talking about, not a devotee. But still it's Krishna. So Krishna's talking to Arjuna, so therefore he says me. He's referring to himself. Right. Here in this next verse.
Yo mam pasyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pasyati tasya hamna pranasyami sachamena pranasyati.
For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So this is the result of the person's vision given in the last verse. He's never lost. It means that he never falls down. When Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, when a yogi is constantly realizing me directly with his senses, that he is my worshipper, and he never falls down. Na pranashyati. And Srila Prabhupada discusses the direct relationship between the yogi and the Supersoul in context of full realization of Krishna. So he says, we'll read, a person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance, he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. an intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. Naturally, when such a person is always meditating on the Lord and seeing the Lord everywhere, then the Lord becomes somewhat purchased by that person. And he blesses that person. In the yogi's case, the super soul blesses the person that he will never fall down from his realization. And in the case of the devotee, the blessing comes from Krishna that he'll attain prema and also never fall down. Prabhupada writes, at this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Okay, some more of the bhava or the vision. In text 31, sarva bhuta stitam yomam pajanke katmamastitaha sarvatha vartamanopi sayogi mai vartate. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. So, our acharyas, usually what they do is they bring this verse to the level of a devotee talking about bhakti in their tikas or commentaries. Baladeva Dibhushan, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and this, and sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. Prabhupada writes, a yogi who is practicing meditation on the Supersoul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna's Vishnu with four hands holding concha, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. Krishna, in this form of Supersoul, is situated in everyone's heart. Furthermore, there is no difference between the innumerable Supersouls present in the innumerable hearts of living entities. Nor is there a difference between a Krishna conscious person always engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna and a perfect yogi engaged in meditation on the Supersoul. The yogi in Krishna consciousness, even though he may be engaged in various activities while in material existence, remains always situated in Krishna. So then Prabhupada quotes from the Narada Pancharatra, which is quoted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his tika. Dikkalanyana vachine krishne cheto vidhayacha tanmayo bhavati kshipram jivo brahmani yojaya. By concentrating one's attention on the transcendental form of Krishna, who is all-pervading and beyond time and space, one becomes absorbed in thinking of Krishna and then attains the happy stage of transcendental association with him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has quoted that, meditation on my four-armed form of Vishnu is recommended to the yogi during his sadhana stage, which culminates in realizing my Satchidananda form of Shyamasundara, Kunjavihari. And he says, they attain Krishna Samipya Moksha, which means that they're always situated near Krishna. And he quotes this verse, and therefore Prabhupada also quotes this verse from the Narada Pancharatra. Now, what does this person do? How does he act?
Atmopamyena sarvatra samam pasyati arjuna sukam vayadivadhukam sayogi paramo mataha.
He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. So this is something similar to verse 5:18, Vidyavanaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hasti Shunichayava Shapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. But here, some specifics on the primary lakshanas or characteristics of their equanimity is being discussed. Some specific details of what does it mean, Pandita Samadarshana. This is one of the main things that it means. And it means that the person, you know, he thinks of others equal to himself, because he knows that they're spirit souls. So he just understands that as he likes happiness and dislikes distress, so other people also like to be happy and they don't like to be disturbed. So therefore he tries to make others happy and not just disturb other people, not to put them in a suffering condition. And naturally he also feels that since he's connected with the Supreme, he feels great nityananda, bliss. So he wants to share that with others. So previously it was said that Pandita Samadarshana, he has this equal vision, but one should practice feeling like this in describing this verse. Some compassion for others' suffering and some desiring that they become situated in happiness like him. So this is particularly applicable to us, because we are devotees and we are preachers. So we want to see other people become happy also, as we are feeling some relief from the miseries of the material nature, the modes of nature, the pushings of the mind, the various burning desires which come up due to intense passion. So we to a certain degree, depending on our advancement, we're free from those things. So we want to also help other people to develop this. Let's just wait a second, okay? So, Prabhupada writes here, here is contrast between the pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man towards Krishna consciousness. So, naturally, this yogi would be considered a little bit higher. His activities are... Someone who actually does that, tries to influence others to understand the Lord's presence.
So Prabhupada, there in the proportion that when we offer obeisances, it is offering to the super soul within the heart of the person. But is that also true for devotees? Because when we offer obeisances to devotees, we say Vancha Katataro Vesha, we are actually referring to the devotee paying obeisances, not to the super soul within the heart. So what should be the mood of a devotee when you offer the obeisances to another devotee? Is it to the super soul within the heart or to the devotee?
Well, the devotee can think of the super soul in the heart. But he also realizes that a Vaishnava is very, very dear to the Lord. He's even, as we'll see, more dear to than his very self. So therefore, offering the obeisances to the devotee is even better than offering obeisances to the super soul in the heart. But it's okay if you're reminded of the Lord in the heart, that's all right. But it's not that we only offer our obeisances to the Lord and not to the Lord's devotees. We feel that even if the Lord wasn't in his heart, he's also worthy of my offering obeisances to him, because he's dear to the Lord. Okay. Now we're going to go to the next section. Yes.
518, it refers basically to the soul. 518.
Uh-huh.
Right. This refers to the super soul.
Right, yes. That's the difference here. That was the Nishkam Karma Yogi coming up to the stage of self-realization. Here, the Ashtanga Yogi is coming to the level of Paramatma realization, which includes the self-realization. It's higher. That's good. So the devotees, they may not be on the level of seeing the super soul, but they kind of feel a oneness or a kinship with all living entities. When they begin preaching and practicing Krishna consciousness and then going out to preach, after some years they begin to feel a kind of like they feel comfortable, or they feel a kinship with those who they're preaching to. This is also due to the fact that they're realizing that those people are spirit souls and they're part and parcel of Krishna. That they're also devotees, which have just forgotten that they're devotees. So this is one of the probably main attractions that people have to devotees, because they feel somehow close with the devotees, even though perhaps they never met them before. Have you ever had that experience? When you come, say you go to a new temple, or you just join, maybe when you first joined this temple, and you met all of those who are here now, and somehow you felt like you knew them your whole life, or something like this. Although you know that you never met them, but you felt as if you had known them your whole life. So that happens even when you're meeting people like outside who are not even devotees. And then what to speak of devotees? So this is like one of the elements here. Is that the person, by comparison to his own self, he sees the equality. He feels a kind of kinship or compassion. He wants to make or help the other persons to become happy like this. And so those people, when they feel that, then they don't really know what it is, but somehow they feel attracted to the devotees. And then the devotee can influence that person. You know, he can say, "Why don't you come to this program?" And then he says, "Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll come," you know. And he doesn't know why, you know, that he never came to such a program before. Or "Here, take this book and give a little donation." "Yeah, yeah, okay, how much do you want?" You know, and then they just... The devotees can influence the people very much like that because of that feeling. It's just a feeling. It's like a very subtle thing. And that's the principle here that is being discussed. Even in the Ashtanga Yogi, who's advanced, he feels some kind of feeling like this due to the super soul. So the Bhagavan realization is higher than Paramatma, so naturally it should include those lower components of the other yoga systems. So I just wanted to point this out so that you can understand how, you know, the devotees, they get all of the components, realizations, or qualities of the yogis of the other systems. So, now, from text 33 to 36, we have another section. Now, what would you call, we already did two sections, from 1 to 9, and 10 to 32. So what, you have some names for these sections? What would you call them? What about 1 to 9? What's that?
Prerequisites.
Okay. Someone else? Nishkam Karma Yoga. Into Ashtanga Yoga. Or up to. It has to have something to do with Ashtanga Yoga, right? It should be. Yeah.
Detached work next to yoga.
Huh?
1 to 3, detached work.
Detached work that leads to Ashtanga Yoga. Yeah.
1 to 3, and then the 4 to 9 is yoga.
From 4 to 9.
Sorry, bro, I'm going to say actually 1 to 2 is Nishkam Karma Yoga.
Oh, 1 to 2.
Yeah, 3 to 9 is behavior of Ashtanga Karma Yoga.
Ashtanga
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga. It's actually true because at that level it's called karma, right? And then the second stage is shanti, right? So you could say ashtanga, the karma ashtanga yoga,
karma yogi on the platform of ashtanga.
Karma yogi on the platform of ashtanga, attempting to perform ashtanga. We said there's two levels. Bhaktivinoda Thakur described there's two levels of Ashtanga Yoga: karma and shanti. Or shanta? Shanti. Yeah, shanti. So that means when he's still performing his nishkam karma, up to which point? Okay, Yoga Ruda. Okay, but up to dhyana in the Ashtanga practice. When he's able to meditate, then he's called Shanti Ashtanga Yogi or Yoga Rudha, the higher level. So there's basically two levels. There's the Yoga Rurukshu, which means the person who's desiring to practice yoga. And then Yoga Rudha, who's actually practicing. It's like, you know, a Kanishta. He's not really a Vaishnava. He's called Vaishnava Praya. Like this, or Vaishnava Abbas, or Bhakta Abbas. Right? So the same thing with this Ashtanga Yogi. In the beginning, he's a Yoga Rurukshu, means he's a yogi wannabe, as we say. You know, he wants to be a yogi. Right? It's like when people come to the, you know, the Muralidhar house, right? That means they're desiring to come into their ashram icha. Right? Ashram me icha. They desire to enter the ashram. Right? It's something like this. Huh? Brahmacharya Bhas. Yeah. So, anyway, the VTE book says this is called Yoga Rurukshu and Yoga Rudha practices. That's two levels, from 1 to 9. Because it's described, you know, although Yoga Rurukshu is just briefly mentioned, but still it's mentioned. And then the Yoga Rudha platform is more elaborately described in that section, mainly Yoga Rudha. So then, from 10 to 32, we see that person's actually meant to go to a Shuchao Deshe, Rahasi Sthitaha, some sacred, confidential, you know, place. That means in the forest. He's not just, you know, in the village, on this side of the village or something. He's in the vana, you know, tapovan. So that means that this stage is the arudha. He's actually practicing now, yoga arudha. I mean, he may be only a dhyana, but gradually he comes to samadhi. When he comes to samadhi, then he comes to self-realization, and then paramatma realization, atma and paramatma realizations. And that's the end of the, right? So what do you call that section? Huh? Processes of Ashtanga. Processes and results of Ashtanga Yoga. Wait a minute, I can't hear you. Everyone talking at the same time. I can't understand. Raise your hand.
Process and results of Yoga Rudra.
Process and results of Yoga Rudra. Okay, that's good.
Practice and vision of Ashtanga Yoga.
Practice and vision of Ashtanga Yoga. Yes.
Practicing Ashtanga Yoga leads to transcendental
yoga. Okay, that's good.
Practice for perfection in Ashtanga Yoga.
Practice for perfection. 10 to 32. The VT book goes to 27 and 28. It says about something else, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur made it clear in his Atika that from 10 to 32, it's talking about the sadhana, the yogi. And this is what it was always for in Burijan's books. And so I don't know why they changed it like that. I don't agree with that, their sections.
10 to 32 includes also the stage of samadhi.
Up to 32, yeah.
After 20, onwards is samadhi, no? So it cannot be included in sadhana. Sadhana is only up to 17.
Well, if you call it stages of yoga practice, he's still practice. I mean, he's still doing the yoga. It's not like he's already floated up into the sky. He's still meditating. Okay, so anyway, you can say stages of Ashtanga Yoga, which includes Samadhi, right? But you're saying after 27, right?
After 17.
After 17?
18 onwards it goes into the perfectional stage. 18
onwards. Well, it mentions, it only briefly mentions the perfectional stage. What was it?
Endless place.
The result is described in 15. 16 and 17 is also practicing.
Sadhana.
It's a sadhana. 18 describes, okay, that there's some, you know, result given when the yoga is complete. 20 to 23 is also a samadhi. 24 is also described.
Is also sadhana.
24 to 28. Yeah, there's some sadhana also described. Initial stages in 24. Yeah, 24, 25, 26. Yes. 27 is self-realization. 28 is super soul realization. And then how he sees in 29, 30, 31, and then 32. That's how he acts. So you can see that Krishna, you know, he kind of jumps around a little bit. He doesn't give it. I mean, Krishna's not writing a manual. He's just speaking to Arjuna. You know what I mean? It's not like he's writing a book. So, you know, Bhagavad Gita is actually not a book. It's just a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. We have to remember that. That's why I think he kind of, you know, when you're speaking, you also, when you're having a conversation, you go back, then go forward, and this. So that's why it's required that we use our intelligence, we study, we look at the Sanskrit words, we look at the commentaries, then we can understand what's going on. In we're studying it philosophically, so we want to know, you know, the divisions. Okay, so after Arjuna hears all of this, he says, "Whoa now, Krishna, this is really difficult. Wait a minute, this is too much. 8 minutes, Krishna, 8 minutes." Arjuna vacha yuyam yogasthaya prukta samyena marusudana etasyaham napasyami chanchalatvat stitim stiram. Arjuna said, "O Madhusudan, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. Na pasyami, says, I do not see how this is going to be possible, what you have described. Prabhupada comments, the system of mysticism described by Krishna to Arjuna, beginning with the word Shushal Deshe, which is 10, and ending with Yogi Parama, which is here, the last 32, is here rejected by Arjuna out of a feeling of inability. Right? So in the commentaries, Arjuna says, I can't do it. Maybe for 2 or 3 days, Krishna, but because the mind is flickering. You said that I should empathize with the happiness and the stress of living entities. I can do that with my friends and relatives or for those who are neutral, but I can't do it with those who are envious and who criticize me. I can't do it with both Yudhisthira and Duryodhan. No. Maybe 2 or 3 days. And even if you say I should use my discrimination with the knowledge of the super soul and understanding all of the knowledge that you gave me, but still the mind is hard to control. It's impossible for me. That's a paraphrase, actually. It's quite long, much longer. So then Krishna says, what is the problem, Arjuna? Why do you find it so difficult? The mind is the reins, and the intelligence is the driver of the chariot of the body, and the soul is the passenger. Right? So he quotes this from the, what is it? The Katha Upanishad. Atmanam ratitam vidhi, shariram ratam evacha. So then Arjuna challenges this example given by Krishna right here in this verse 34. Chanchanam hi mana Krishna pramati bhalavadridham tasyaham nigraham manye vayur eva sadushkara. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So Arjuna says, just like Krishna tells him that you just follow, you just practice this. Why you can't? The mind is like the reins. The intelligence is the driver. You just grab the reins with your intelligence. You just grab the whole of the mind with your intelligence, Arjuna. Intelligence, I told you, is stronger than the mind. And then he says, but the mind is turbulent, restless. You can't grab it with the intelligence. And Krishna says, but if... Oh, Arjuna says, but just like a strong disease, it may not be affected by good medicine, which has the power to counteract that medicine. Similarly, the mind doesn't accept the intelligence, which is endowed with wisdom. The mind is so powerful that it overcomes the intelligence. So you're saying that I should grab the mind with my intelligence as the driver of the chariot grabs the reins. But it's not possible. Why? Because the mind is like the wind blowing in the sky. How can you grab it? It's impossible. And he says further that the intelligence is strong, like a very sharp needle. And it can pierce some cloth or paper, but it can't pierce the mind, which is like some piece of iron. This mind is hard like iron, and the intelligence can't penetrate it like some piece of paper. That's another example. And then Krishna says, yes, that's true. What you have said is right. Asang shayam, Mahabaho. But even when the disease is advanced, Arjuna, by taking the proper medicine of abhyas and vairagya, again and again, under the proper doctor, the guru, And becoming renounced, giving up the desire for sense gratification, one will be able to catch the mind and keep it in one's fist. So Arjuna gives this example of the disease, which is very strong. And Krishna says, but the medicine, if you take it again and again, over a long period of time, under the proper guidance of a good doctor, right? Then you can actually conquer the mind. Okay. So this is the next verse. Krishna is describing how to control the mind. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Sangshayam Mahabhaho Manurduni Graham Chalam Abhyasena Tukonteya Varagyena Chagriyate. Lord Krishna said, O mighty arm, son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. So, he calls Arjuna Mahabaho, saying that you are Mahabaho, that you have defeated so many big warriors, and you have even satisfied Lord Shiva in battle. But that is not so great. But if you conquer their mind with the supreme weapon of yoga, then you deserve the name Mahabaho. So, Kunteya, you must use Abhyas and Vairagya. Suitable practice, taking the medicine again and again, and Vairagya, learning to give up attachment to enjoyment.
When we see this verse, it appears that Krishna is encouraging him to perform Ashtanga Yoga despite the process being difficult.
Yes.
Actually, Prabhupada gives it in such a way that now Arjuna himself rejected Ashtanga Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna wanted us to practice Bhakti Yoga, like the Prabhupada said. But the way Krishna says it appears that no, Arjuna is trying to try Ashtanga.
Yeah, and he calls him Kunteya. And you are the son of my aunt, Kunti. So, therefore, it's my duty to help you control the mind. Don't worry, I'll help you. Of course, very soon he tells him to do Bhakti Yoga. So. Prabhupada writes, the difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he suggests that by practice and detachment it is possible. What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules and regulations of placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind or the super soul, restraining the senses and mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. By detaching the mind from activities not devoted to the Lord, one can very easily learn Vairagya. Vairagya means detachment from matter and engagement of the mind in spirit. So, this is a more practical, you know, definition of abhyas for us. It's true. We can see that even though Krishna tells him this, Arjuna is still a little bit worried, right, that he may not be able to do this. Which is also an indication that if he can't do it, then what about us? So, Krishna continues, Asamshayatmana yogo dushprapa iti me matihi vashayatmana tuyatata shakyo vaptum upayata. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur adds that this happens after a long time of practice. He attains success after a long time. And Prabhupada writes, trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. Yoga practice without mental control is a waste of time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that one who doesn't try to control his mind by vairagya and vyas can never perfect his yoga. One must try by adopting the proper means. He's speaking as if Krishna. He's quoting Krishna. When I say the proper means, I mean concentrate the mind by Nishkam Karma Yoga, Bhagavad Arpita Nishkam Karma Yoga, and Abhyas as of meditation on me. These should be done as limbs of yoga. As we said before, the Nishkam Karma Yoga originally, in the beginning, it's being practiced in the initial stages. And that is done as a kind of anga of Ashtanga Yoga, a part of Ashtanga Yoga. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned that. So when I say appropriate means, or proper means, mean to concentrate the mind by Bhagavad Arpit, Nishkam Karma Yoga, and Abhyas of meditation on me, practicing meditation on me. These should be done as limbs of yoga while accepting the sense objects with vairagya only for maintenance. Thus, one gradually gets perfection or attains perfection. So, because Arjuna is a beginner, he's not going to be able to do this right away. He should do Nishkam Karma Yoga and gradually can meditate on Krishna. So, after hearing that still that success is dependent upon mind control, Arjuna still has some doubts whether he can do this, and rightly so, because it's not easy to do. So he asks these questions. So, therefore, we would say that from 33 to 36 is a section. Okay, the third section. Necessity of controlling the mind. The necessity of controlling the mind. Arjuna vacha ayati shadayo peto yogachalita manasaha aprapya yoga samsidhim kam gatim krishna gacchati. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly-mindedness and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism? So Prabhupada writes here that self-realization is sought by the path of knowledge, the path of eightfold system, or by bhakti yoga. In each of these processes, one has to realize the constitutional position of the living entity, his relationship with God, and the activities whereby he can reestablish the lost link and achieve the highest perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. Following any of the above three methods, which is Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, one is sure to reach the supreme goal sooner or later. This was asserted by the Lord in the second chapter. Even a little endeavor on this transcendental path offers a great hope for deliverance. So, here we have some indication that the verse Neha Vikrama Nashasti is referring to these three paths. Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. We will keep our antennas up and try to search for more evidence. But here's one indication.
Karma Yoga is not mentioned.
That's right.
That section was basically Nishkam Karma Yoga.
But the Acharyas, previous Acharyas said that this was discussing Nirgun Bhakti, verse 40 and 41. So therefore we're still searching for a definitive answer to our question. But when I read this, now when you read, then you'll be looking for this, right? Because your antennas are up. Before they were down. Now at least they're up. Because now you'll have a chance of learning the truth. Before you were not searching. Now you're searching. Now Prabhupada continues. Out of these three methods, the path of bhakti is suitable, especially suitable in this age, because it is the most direct method. To be doubly assured, Arjuna is asking Lord Krishna to confirm his former statement. Nehabikramanashasti, right? One may sincerely accept the path of self-realization, but the process of cultivation of knowledge and the practice of Ashtanga are generally very difficult for this age. Therefore, despite constant endeavor, one may fail for many reasons. One reason may the person may not be sufficiently serious about following the process. And the second reason is that Maya Devi tries to defeat the practitioner by various allurements. Okay, so Prabhupada gave two of the many reasons why it's difficult. Interesting, huh?
Is it not so, Bhakti or also? Both the reasons? Both the reasons or Bhakti or also?
Yes. Yes, it seems so. He's just saying that Jnana and Ashtanga are very difficult for this age. And that one may fail or fall down because of these reasons. So that these reasons also apply to us, it seems. You know? Right? We see that devotees also can fall down. They're not, they don't have an absolute guarantee. And they may not be so serious, and they may also be tested by Maya Devi. Okay. So now Arjuna clarifies his question in the next verse. It's the same question, but with more detail. Kachinno bhaya vibrashtash chinna brahmivanasyati apratishto mahabaho vimudho ramanapati. O mighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? So now Arjuna calls Krishna mahabaho. Actually they're both mahabaho. Krishna is the big Mahabaho and Arjuna is the little Mahabaho. So here, Mahabaho means that Krishna has strong arms to protect his devotees from the repeated cycle of birth and death, samsara. So Arjuna is wondering about this person, that he's begun the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. He's gone past the stage of Yoga Guru Rukshu. Okay? In other words, he's one step above the beginner. But he somehow or other, some desires for sense gratification enter into his heart. In his heart, some desires have appeared. But he's already given up the place where he can satisfy those desires, which is in the field of karma. So this person has given up his karma, whereby he could attain satisfaction of his desires and attain svarga. And he's also given up his yoga, whereby he could attain liberation. So the person's sincere, but somehow or other he just didn't make it. It's not like a cheater or something. So what happens to him? He's like stuck in between. He doesn't get svarga, he doesn't get liberation. So does he just like a small piece of a cloud that separates from the main cloud? Does he just dissipate into the space, and he has no standing, either in karma yoga or ashtanga yoga or any yoga? And what happens to this person? So since he has no position, where will he go?
What is the connection why Arjuna started asking this question, being fallen? He was not asking in the previous yogas.
He asked in the previous verse.
No. While describing the previous yogas and previous classes like Jnana Yoga and Niskandana, he's not asking this question of moving away from the path of the yoga. But here he is asking, what is the...
Well, the stakes are higher now. In other words, the person has to control his mind totally. And he's going off, you know, giving up his karma, his svadharma, his relatives, his friends, his work in the world, his karmakan, all of his yajnas and all religious activities, and he's going off into the forest to sit and meditate on the Paramatma for liberation. And it's not easy. It's got to be free from fear, completely celibate, the mind controlled. And so he's given up all the worldly activities, and he's taking on this difficult yoga system to attain liberation. So what if he doesn't make it? Then what happens to him? He doesn't go to svarga, past, present, and future, perfectly. Sarvagya. Krishna, you are the best person to answer this because you are Sarvagya. You are omniscient. So Krishna's heart melted by Arjuna's glorification of him in verse 39. And so he speaks to him, Partha, hey Partha, and Tata, which means like a son. Because Tat means that, like an expansion of this father. And when you add this Anna, then it becomes Tata in Sanskrit grammar. It's a affix, Anna. So like a guru speaking to his disciple in Vatsalya Bhava, or a father speaking to his son. This is the mood. Or some elder speaking to a young person, says Tata. Like you may say, Beta. Au Beta. Krishna's speaking in such a way to Arjuna because his heart became very soft by seeing his friend in distress. And plus, Arjuna glorified Krishna, told him, you are the only person. I am completely dependent on you. And that was enough to soften Krishna's heart, which is already soft. And so he says, hey Partha. He says, Shri Bhagavan Vacha Partha Naiveyama Mutra Vinashastasya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Kritkaschit Durgatim Tata Gacchati. Krishna said, son of Pritha, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. Prabhupada quotes the famous verse in the Bhagavatam, Syaktyakvasadharmam charanam bhujam harer pajanna pako ta pachit yado yadi yatra kva bhavadram bhudamusyakin o vartato pachataram sutam. So someone who is, his bhajan is not paka, but it's apaka. Tato patet tato yadi. What is the loss for him? Nothing. Because nahi kalyana kaschit durgatim tata kaschiti. That he never is overcome by evil. Someone who does good, he never is degraded durgatim. He never gets a bad destination. Prabhupada is describing what it means, kalyanakrit, in the commentary from the second and third paragraph. The purport may be understood as follows. Humanity may be divided into two sections, namely regulated and non-regulated. Those who engage simply bestial sense gratification without knowledge of the next life or salvation belong to the non-regulated section. And those who follow the principles prescribed duties in the scriptures are classified amongst the regulated. The non-regulated, both civilized and uncivilized, educated and non-educated, strong and weak, are full of animal propensities. Their activities are never auspicious, because while they're enjoying animal propensities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, they perpetually remain in material existence, which is miserable. Right? So you sometimes have civilized, non-regulated people. That means like, you know, they're kind of high-class animals. Sophisticated animals with a shirt and tie. Something like this. But all of those non-regulated or remain in samsara, in misery. On the other hand, those who are regulated by scriptural injunctions and who thus rise gradually to Krishna consciousness certainly progress in life. Then he continues. Those who are following the path of auspiciousness can be divided into three sections, namely karmis, jnanis, and devotees. 1, 2, 3. Those who are following the rules and regulations of scripture for material happiness, the karmis, may be further divided into two classes. Actually, this is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you're familiar with the way he writes, you'll understand this point. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's tika. This is really his style. Have you read some of his books before? He likes to classify things very much. And he's expert at doing it. So those who are karmis are further divided into two classifications. Those who are sakam and those who are nishkam. Fruitive workers and those who desire no fruit. Those who want fruit and those who don't want fruit. Sakam, nishkam. Those are the karmis, right? Those who are after fruitive results, the sakam, may be elevated to a higher standard of life, even to higher planets. But still, because they're not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. So the sakam karmis are not kalyanakrit. And that means they're not guaranteed, you know, some perfection. The only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization or liberation from the material bodily concept of life is not at all auspicious. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used the word nityananda. If it's not aimed at nityananda, eternal bliss, then it's not auspicious. That's very interesting. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, only when the purpose of getting nityananda is combined with karmakanda can such yoga be called karma yoga. So different religious activities and karmakanda, when they're aimed at nityananda, eternal bliss, then and only then can you call it karma yoga. Then it's auspicious. And of course, Krishna conscious activities are all auspicious, super auspicious. Because everything is aimed at Nityananda.
How it becomes karma kanda?
Huh?
How it becomes karma kanda?
How it becomes, how what becomes karma kanda? It's not. It's karma yoga. It's just when they're doing the same yogas just for enjoyment, wealth, beauty, longevity, higher planets, swarga. They're doing those yogas and so forth, following their swadharma, just so that they can become wealthy, famous, whatever. And then it's all material and it's considered on moral principles only. Only morality. And it's not considered fully auspicious. I mean, it's religious, but it's not transcendental. So when you take those same activities and the person has the higher aim, not just for enjoying in this world, but for Nityananda, then it's called karma yoga. So see, karma kanda and sakam karma yoga are both sakam karma. But you add the yoga when you have the intention of liberation, moksha. You know, okay? Because sometimes sakam karma could be talking about karma kanda or karma yoga, sakam karma yoga. It depends on what is the intention of the person. Right? So, okay, this is the first answer to the question. Don't worry, Arjuna. He's just trying to, you know, pacify Arjuna. By saying Partha, Tata, don't worry, you're not going to get a Durgatim from this. It's auspicious, don't worry.
The destination of.
You ask me these philosophical questions after the section, when we get to 45. Okay? 41. So now he continues to answer Arjuna's question. Prapya punya kritam lokan ushidva shashvati samaha shuchinam shrimatam gehe yoga brashto vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. So, prapya punya kritam lokan. Right, they attain punya lok. What lok is punya lok? Well, yeah, the place where those who perform ashwamedha yagya go. Yes. Oh yeah, Indraloka. That's kind of Indraloka. It's in chapter 9. Yeah. Yeah. Indraloka. Amaravati. Right? It says Amara, but it's not Amara. It's a trick. So, Ushiva Shashvati Samaha. So many, many years, right? Samaha. No, they stay there for thousands of years. Later, he says 10,000 years, right? 10,000 years. Why? Because they have desires. And they can fulfill their desires there. Dancing in the Nandana Kanana and taking somaras, etc. Then, later, after he fulfills his desires, gradually he gets disgusted with sense gratification again. And then he comes back down. Baladeva Vidyabhushan said, after prolonged opportunities for sense gratification, he again develops distaste for them and returns to the earth. So when you engage in a lot of sense gratification, you gradually get disgusted with it because it doesn't satisfy the heart. So then he takes birth in one of two places, Gehe, in the house, in the family, Suchinam and Srimatam. So Suchinam, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, those of good character and conduct. Prabhupada writes, in a righteous Brahmin Vaishnav family, which is quite good character and conduct. It's quite clean, shuchi. Right? And Srimatam, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, wealthy business people, right? Wealthy Vaishyas or royalty. And Prabhupada writes, aristocratic merchants. So it could be Vaishya or Kshatriya family. But wealthy and aristocratic, high class people, you know, they often have temples in their homes, these high class people. When they're, right, pakabanyas, they have a lot of money, they have a nice mandir in their temple, in their home.
Banya.
Banya. Pakabanya. Right? And Kshatriyas also, they're very religious. And of course, Brahmanas, those who are very high conduct. Prabhupada writes, the real purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent and who fail because of material allurements are allowed by the grace of the Lord to make full utilization of their material propensities. And after that, they are given opportunities to live prosperous lives in righteous or aristocratic families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves to full Krishna consciousness. Okay. Now, there's another kind of situation. If the yogi, this first yogi, he fell down after a short practice. But this next one, Atava, means that he was practicing for a long time and was quite advanced, but still did not achieve perfection. So there's two kinds. One who is mostly involved in karma, and then the other one who's actually renounced. So he's come to the jnana level, and he has some realization, but it's not full realization. Attaba yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadhi dulabhataram loka janma yadidrusham. Or, if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists, yoginam, who are surely great in wisdom, dhimatam. Certainly, such a birth is dulabhataram, very rare in this world. Dulabhataram, extremely rare in this world. The acharyas, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention, I believe it was in the previous verse, about Nimi, he took his birth. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions about Nimi. He took his birth in Janak Maharaj's family. So he's an example of the first one, I believe. Nimi. Later he became Nimi Maharaj, King Nimi. It's in the Bhagavatam. He questions and speaks with the Yogendras, Navayogendras. So, yes, Prabhupada describes his own situation. What's that? Well, he was born in Janaka's family, so he's in the Kshatriya family. It would appear that he's in the first situation, because otherwise he would have been born in the family of yogis. But I know I'll have to look again in that, because I thought that Nimi was given an example for 42, but when I realized that he had taken birth in Janak Maharaj's family, then I thought that it must be 41. Okay, anyway, I'll take a look again. I forget which one it was, because the note I have is like at the end of 41. Sometimes it's, you know, I can't tell where it was. I didn't write on the note which one it was. Yeah, that's true. Janak Maharaj is a pure devotee, so he could also be in the second category. Yeah, he was both. Rich and in a devotee family. The devotee is better than a yogi family. Prabhupada writes, fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupada Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord. And both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. That means Krishna. Of course, you know the story how they met. Probably heard that 100 times. So what happens after taking such a birth? The next verse describes. Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhate parvadehikam yatate chattato bhuya samsidhau kurunandana. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. O son of Guru. Kurunandana, O darling son of my uncle Pandu, you should not worry. You will never be lost. Prabhupada writes that King Bharat, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana, is an example of good birth for the revival of previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharat was the emperor of the world, and since his time, this planet has been known among the demigods as Bharat Varsh. Formerly it was known as Ilavata Varsh. The emperor at an early age retired for spiritual perfection, but failed to achieve success.